both the civilian negotiators and the military negotiators put forward several names. So he wasn't the military pick. He was the one they sort of all agreed on. They had also suggested a Josephine Ouédraogo, the military did, and she had been a minister under Sankara. But she apparently wasn't interested in the position. The names the civilians put forward, there was an archbishop who also didn't want it, and the names of two newspaper editors, and they were seen as generally having not much political experience. I mean, they were good journalists and critical of Campoore, but were not seen as having sufficient weight to carry through the transition period. Kafando himself is very little known to most Burkinabe, or people outside the country. He's been a diplomat his whole life. I'm going by the official biographies. And he was foreign minister quite some time ago. That was in the early 1980s. Some of the opposition groups reproach him a little bit for having been close. Well, they say he was too close to Campoore because he was ambassador to the UN. At some point in the late 90s, early 2000s. He had been ambassador to the UN under a previous regime as well. And he was known to have been sort of on the outs politically when the revolutionary government of Thomas Sankara came in. But his role is basically as a caretaker. He won't be allowed to run, like other members of the government, won't be allowed to run in the elections that will probably be held in November 2015. And there's a lot of forces involved in the new transitional government. So it's not like, you know, the president, although there is a strong executive, you know, he won't be able to change course very much. There'll be a lot of countervailing forces trying to keep things on track. So his identity, you know, is less consequential, I think, though, you know, we could be wrong. And a lot, I think, might depend on what his role is, or his any alliance he may have with the military, which we really don't know. I wouldn't read too much into the fact that the military put forward his name, but I wouldn't discount it either. You know, just a lot that we don't know yet.
Who are the groups competing for power in Burkina Faso? Are they regional or ethnic groups? For example, are any represented or overrepresented within the military?
I think the military is quite mixed, certainly at the officer corps. It's traditionally never been dominated by a single ethnic group. The Mossi are about half of the entire country, so, you know, they'll be dominant in whatever you put together. But other ethnic groups will be represented as well. Historically, you have not had great regional and ethnic tensions in Burkina Faso, unlike some other countries in the region. I don't want to say they're not there, but it hasn't been a major factor in the country's political life.
I understand that some who are influential in the opposition are followers of the late President Thomas Sankara. Can you tell us more about that? Are they active elements of the opposition, labor, civil society, etc.?
They're different people and different groups at different levels. And, you know, to say one's a follower of Sankara can mean different things. You know, generally sort of a radical revolutionary outlook. There's the official opposition parties, and, you know, you lose count of how many there are. I mean, the country has over 70 parties. 40-some-odd are count themselves as part of the opposition. Of those, maybe a half-dozen call themselves Sankarist. The largest one had a few deputies in the last National Assembly. Then there's a lot of younger people who are active in various civil society groups, not so much in the trade unions, but, you know, human rights organizations, and a lot of unaffiliated young folks who sort of, you know, Sankara was their hero, is kind of a mythical figure of somebody who stood up to against corruption. And, of course, if you don't like Campoore, what better way to express that than to say you're a supporter of the, you know, the president that Campoore had assassinated in his military coup. So you'll find among young people in general is a lot of citation of Sankara's name. In demonstrations, you know, they'd carry his portrait. You know, they use slogans, and it's quite widespread, actually. It's hard to measure. In elections, you know, they generally didn't poll that well, maybe a couple hundred thousand votes. Of course, those weren't the best organized elections under Campori. We'll have to see come November what kind of electoral weight they have. But I do want to stress that they go far beyond the official parties. Even the outgoing military interim head of state, Lieutenant Colonel Zita, in a speech sort of referred to everybody sharing the identity of integrity that they've carried, you know, people have carried with them since Sankara's revolution of August 1983. So it's kind of an acknowledgement of this general sentiment.
What is the agenda of Sankara supporters?
So the official Sankara's parties, you know, they're recognized parties, they favor multi-party democracy and running in elections, as almost everybody does. And if they have any criticism of the Sankara era, it was that they weren't elections back then. The younger folks have a more of a hodgepodge kind of approach, probably a bit more radical. They might be a bit disdainful of elections that seem to bring into power elite parties. They will also have more of a social and economic agenda that would sort of highlight what they see as the strong points of the Sankara era. You know, that is health care, education for the poorest sectors of the population, favoring the rural poor over the urban elites, advancing women, because Sankara was a big champion of women's advancement and appointed a number of women to his government, but also on foreign policy issues, taking sort of at least a mildly anti-imperialist stance as they would view it. So they might be leery of some of Campori's past alliances, the extent to which he was close to France or even to, you know, the Pentagon, the U.S. interests in terms of the war on terror. They wouldn't break those kinds of ties, I'm sure, but they would have been a bit critical. Certainly they've been critical of the West in terms of their support for Campori and then not saying very much about Campori's attempts to manipulate the Constitution to stay in power. People in Burkina, the more radical types, would also be critical of neighboring African governments for not having said very much about Campori's manipulations and then coming in immediately after his fall to insist that there be a civilian-led regime. I mean, they're for that. They're for a civilian-led regime, but, you know, it just rankled a bit, some of these outside criticisms, mm-hmm. after they had brought him down.
Mm-hmm. Both Sankara and Campori came to power in military coups. Does this make it more likely that the military will continue to exercise a perhaps overwhelming influence in the country, or have there been changes that have taken place in the last 30 years, demographic, political, et cetera, that may have strengthened support for civilian institutions?
Well, look, from the very beginning of the country's independence, the military has had quite a considerable influence. This was one of the weakest states in West Africa from the outset, and the military was one of the few institutions, here I'm talking about back to the 60s, that had any kind of sort of national scope. The military came in first in 1966 against an unpopular civilian regime with popular support. People called on the military to take power. So it wasn't just Sankara and Campori came out of the military. Many previous presidents came out of the military. The differences between Sankara and Campori is Sankara came in with considerable popular support in alliance with civilians. Campori basically engineered a military coup that, you know, led with the assassination of Sankara, so he was unpopular at the outset. Since then, yes, a constitutional system has been erected. Well, Campori's people will try to take credit for that. Others see a combination of pressures from within the country, pro-democracy movements in the early 1990s, and pressures from outside, from the U.S. and France, you know, who sort of wanted more democratic forms of government in the region. Kampouri was pretty good in manipulating that and orchestrating the sort of the rudiments, the outside scaffolding of a constitutional multi-party system. But he ensured, you know, using the powers of incumbency and all the wealth that the regime could garner to sort of buy off the opposition, divide it, and ensure that he gets elected time after time. Nevertheless, you know, the institutions were created. You had a parliament, you had a, you know, series of Supreme Courts, judicial system. You even had the army expanding to some extent. In all those institutions, you had professionals, people who sort of wanted to take the institution and do with it what they're supposed to do. But it was people around Kampouri, his family, and the ruling party who often would pervert that process or try to turn them toward narrow personal ends. So you had a tension within the institutions. And I think, you know, sort of a little bit the hope for the future is that in combination with the obvious mobilization of people in the streets, these more professional types in the courts, in the military, will finally see an opportunity to get those institutions to function the way they're supposed to on paper, that is, as institutions in service of the public, rather than whoever happens to be in the president's office at the time.
What challenges do you see facing this transition? I mean, what do they need to accomplish even within the next 6 months to ensure a stable transition?
Well, I mean, they have a fairly detailed transition plan. The next step will be in the next few days establishing a government. Kafando will have to name a prime minister who will name a small cabinet, about 25 ministers. That'll be smaller than before. And a national transition council, which is kind of an interim legislature, will be established. That will be dominated by opposition parties and civil society. The military will have his representation. And even about, you know, one-ninth or ten of the 90 seats will go to members of Kampouri's party or allied parties. So they'll have a small voice in what happens. But that's at the formal level. There also are pressures, and it's in the transition plan, to set up a Truth and Reconciliation Commission to look at some of the human rights abuses, the financial scandals of the past couple of decades, to try to shed some light on those and maybe bring some people to justice. There are calls for Kampouri to be tried, probably other top figures in the old regime. You're having shakeups all across the board, like even the Chamber of Commerce, which had been headed by an in-law of the Kampouri's. She's now out. And, you know, they want to have new elections to head up the Chamber of Commerce. So the private sector had not been happy under Kampouri, so they want to reorganize better. All sorts of civil society groups are placing demands on the new transitional government. Of course, you know, they're transitional, so they'll be reticent about doing too many things. There will certainly be a logic to waiting until you have a newly elected president and legislature next November that can do more sweeping things, but expectations are very high. So they're going to have to be doing some things. Now, there's also a lot of economic and social demands. The country is very poor. There was a big visible gap in wealth between people who are close to the regime and ordinary people. So there's a strong sentiment. I mean, labor certainly would want to have salary increases. I don't know if they'll press right away, but, you know, that's been a standard demand because salaries have lagged behind the rise in high prices. Students have their own grievances. Local communities have all sorts of disputes. We've already seen a few conflicts emerging around some of the foreign mining concessions in different parts of the country, where residents in those areas, you know, felt the foreign mining companies were being a bit negligent on environmental standards, you know, dumping toxic waste and stuff like that. So they've occupied a few of these mining sites. There's a lot of, you know, discontent. You know, things like that, if they're not properly managed, you know, if the authorities don't make some attempt to at least listen to the grievances, could get, you know, cause some problems. So it's hard to say. You know, I mean, things could go off the tracks. I think they've started out fairly well. The whole transition process was done with wide consultations, the military, the civilian opposition, human rights groups, consumers associations, religious and traditional leaders. So it's coming in with a sort of a broad basic consensus that I think will be quite useful as we go ahead.
And you're confident that the military is stable enough, no infighting or factions, that there would not be another coup?
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, the military has had its problems. There have been a lot of tensions, for example, between the presidential guard, and Lieutenant Colonel Zeta came out of that, and the regular military, other military units who felt that they were disadvantaged under Kampuori. Just 3 years ago, in 2011, you had a whole series of rank-and-file mutinies in army bases around the country. It was mainly the ranks against the officers because there had been corruption within the officer corps. So there are obviously grievances within the army itself. Those have been kept hidden or suppressed. It's possible some of those may come to the surface now. We don't know. I think it would be very hard for any faction in the military to try to mount a coup. After the ouster of Kampuori, there was so much domestic pressure for setting up a civilian-led regime, and nobody really wants a military regime. So any military faction that might try something would face enormous resistance within the country, not to mention, you know, the regional African Union, ECOWAS, the donor countries, they're all sort of against that.